Boston, Miami, Atlanta, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, Portland, Des Moines, Iowa, and Middlebury, Vermont. There will also be virtual companion screenings as well, so the film will be accessible. You can check their website, lifeafterfilm.com, for locations and dates. And you can go to our website to see our 2022 interview with Reed about his first documentary, I Didn't See You There, in which he, as a disabled filmmaker, reflects on the portrayal of disability in media and popular culture. We have job openings. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Stalin, John Randall, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCorbett, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Torrieri, and Buffy St. Marie Hernandez. To see our Democracy Now! Video and audio podcast, you can go to where you like to get your podcasts. We're also all over social media. Tell your friends about Democracy Now! We are corporate-free, people-powered. I'm Amy Goodman.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. KABU's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, ICE detained a Beaverton chiropractor and father last week by smashing his window open while he was dropping his kid off at daycare. Oregon is doing a good job taking care of our oceans, according to Ocean Conservancy, but we need to work on microplastics. And Mel Gertov brings us the Global Citizen Commentary. Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Tuesday, July 22, 2025. I'm Eric Leuschner. A 38-year-old Beaverton chiropractor was arrested by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in front of his child's daycare center. Khan Babazadeh was initially pulled over by ICE while driving his child to school on July 14. After asking if he could drop his child off first, he continued driving and called his wife to inform her of the situation, according to her, speaking on condition of anonymity due to privacy concerns. Parents at the school, located in a suburb of Portland, are in shock as the incident has shaken their community. Witnesses reported that immigration officers broke Khan Babazadeh's car window to detain him. "I feel like a daycare where young children are taken care of should be a safe place," said Natalie Burning, a parent dropping off her daughter at the Montessori school. "Not only is it traumatizing for the family, it's traumatizing for all the other children as well." Schools used to be considered a sanctuary location that ICE was not supposed to access, but Trump lifted those restrictions early in his second term. It's reported that Mahdi's window was broken after he asked to move from the school grounds onto the street. As he attempted to open his car door on the street, agents broke the window and forcefully took him into custody before he could exit his vehicle. Kelly Burns, a mother of two children at the preschool, said her husband heard the glass shatter. "We want to express how unnecessarily violent and inhumane this was," she stated. "Everyone felt helpless. Everyone was scared." According to ICE, Khan Babazadeh was detained because he is an Iranian citizen who had overstayed his visa. Officers attempted to arrest Khan Babazadeh during a traffic stop when he requested permission to drop his child off at daycare, ICE says. Officers allowed him to proceed to the daycare parking lot, where he stopped cooperating, resisted arrest, and refused to exit his vehicle, resulting in ICE officers breaking a window to complete the arrest. Khan Babazadeh's wife claims he has maintained his legal status since arriving in the U.S. on a student visa and was waiting for a final decision on his green card following an interview months ago. Since the Trump administration took office, immigration arrests of Iranians have dramatically increased. From 2021 to 2024, only 165 Iranian nationals were detained, whereas in 2025 alone, the number has surged to 670. A new report from Ocean Conservancy gives Oregon a good score in the fight against plastic pollution with 3 out of 5 stars, saying the state has made progress on single-use plastics but needs to do more to address microplastics. Isabel Charlet has more.
Oregon has received good marks in the fight against plastic pollution. This is Plastic Free July, and a report called The United States of Plastics from Ocean Conservancy awards Oregon a score of 3 out of 5 stars, saying the state has been a leader in tackling plastic pollution. Dr. Anya Brandon with Ocean Conservancy says Oregon has a lot to feel proud of, including phasing out single-use plastics such as grocery bags.
We also have the oldest bottle bill or deposit return system in the country, and we just became the first state to actually implement extended producer responsibility for packaging.
The new law that went into effect this month transfers the duty of handling packaging waste from local governments and taxpayers to producers. Companies will now pay fees on the environmental impact and quantity of their packaging. Those fees can be lowered by using more sustainable materials or minimizing packaging. Brandon highlights Oregon's need to address microplastics after a study found they were present in all tested waterways across the state. She says legislation to require microfiber filters in washing machines was introduced this year, but the bill did not advance.
Think of your lint catcher in a dryer. It's pretty much the same for washing machines to capture all of those little plastic pieces called microfibers that shed from our clothes.
New federal legislation introduced by Oregon Representative Janelle Bynum and Senator Jeff Merkley, along with 2 Florida Republicans, would mandate a Health and Human Services study on microplastic exposure risks, including cancer and reproductive health impacts. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Oregon developers have been able to build a more affordable housing geared towards homeownership in recent years due to state funding. However, with this year's budget cuts, the funding is drying up. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
The latest round of state-funded LIFT homeownership grants will fund 239 new affordable homes across Oregon. Previous LIFT grants totaling over $100 million have helped triple affordable home production. Kim Gammond from Habitat for Humanity in Lapine says the funding will support 10 new homes in the next 2 years, but notes the program's future is uncertain. In a tough budget year, LIFT was left as the only surviving program supporting affordable homeownership in the state.
Through these grants, we've really built up across the state a network of affordable housing that was finally producing at the level that we needed to see, and we just took a giant step back.
Other programs like the Home Ownership Development Incubator Program and Down Payment Assistance were cut entirely from the state's budget this year. Programs focused on building new affordable rental properties retained funding. Peter Hoover is with Habitat for Humanity and Sisters, another recipient of LIFT funding. He explains in order to qualify for a Habitat home, the households must make at most 80% of the area's median income, adjusted for household size. He says the average home in the area goes for more than $700,000, while the average wage is under $22 per hour.
And what that means is the down payment requirements alone are going to exclude a high percentage of your population.
Gammon says the current budget will mean less affordable housing construction across the state. She adds competition for the next round of LIFT funding will likely be steep.
LIFT funding will remain to be our one source in the next couple years. And as things hopefully get better, we can look at all these funding sources again.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
ICE director defends officers wearing masks during immigration raids, while the Trump administration is found to have ignored dozens of court rulings. And another push is made to abolish the death penalty in Pennsylvania. With that story and more, it's Zamon Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'm not a proponent of the masks. However, if that's a tool that the men and women of ICE to keep themselves and their families safe, then I'll allow it.
Acting Director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement Todd Lyons defends ICE agents wearing masks to CBS News. Administration deportation raids are drawing criticism from Democrats. They charge masked plainclothes agents often use racial profiling and detain both citizens and law-abiding migrants in raids that appear indistinguishable from kidnapping. A new analysis from the Washington Post says the Justice Department has defied or ignored judges' orders in a third of the 160 cases where courts have ruled against President Donald Trump's administration. Many of the cases involve immigration issues. The Senate is about to vote on the controversial nomination of Trump's former personal lawyer and current Assistant Attorney General Emil Bovee to the federal bench, in spite of a whistleblower's going public with texts from him telling staff at Justice to defy court orders. The Supreme Court has closed an eventful term. In Medina versus Planned Parenthood, the court ruled that Medicaid beneficiaries can't sue the federal government over the right to choose their medical provider. Former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance says that could leave low-income people with fewer ways to challenge the loss of health care.
These patients are being told you can no longer have the provider of your own choice. Even though the law guarantees you that right, we, the Supreme Court, are going to strip away your ability to sue to enforce it.
The court also upheld a Tennessee ban on gender-affirming care. The administration is asking that grand jury testimony used to indict multimillionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein be made public. The records are under seal because Epstein's co-conspirator is appealing her conviction, but former prosecutors say unsealing them probably won't answer most of people's questions. The White House is excluding the Wall Street Journal from the press pool for Trump's upcoming trip to Scotland. Trump is suing the Journal for reporting that Trump sent Epstein a signed drawing of a woman for Epstein's 50th birthday. A federal judge has ruled the administration broke the law when it took down a website that displayed how federal funds are apportioned to agencies. The White House was given until Thursday to put the site back up. A bipartisan group of Pennsylvania legislators are trying to repeal the state's death penalty.
It's a bill that removes death penalty as a sentencing option. It leaves the rest of the criminal code just as it is now. It's just that instead of saying for this crime, the sentence can be this or death, it's just taking out or death.
Kathleen Lucas is with Pennsylvanians Against the Death Penalty. The death penalty was enacted there 10 years ago, but currently there's a moratorium on its use. Americans, especially younger people, increasingly oppose capital punishment. One Gallup poll found its support at a 50-year low. NASA employees sent a letter to the administration Monday, urging officials not to follow through with promised cuts, which they argued would threaten safety and scientific advancement. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be a high of 84 degrees and a low of 59 degrees. And tomorrow, it will be a high of 90 and a low of 60 degrees. Today in history, in 1933, American aviator Willie Post completed the first solo flight around the Earth. He covered 15,596 miles in 7 days, 18 hours, and 49 minutes. The quote of the day is from Leo Buscaglia. He said, quote, "We live in a small world. Not a leaf falls that doesn't affect a myriad of things. When we reach out to someone in love and the effect is made, everyone, everything which comes in contact with the person we've affected is better for it." After floating the idea of reopening a shuttered federal prison on Alcatraz Island in California, President Donald Trump tasked two of his cabinet members to see it for themselves last week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. After floating the idea of reopening a shuttered federal prison on Alcatraz Island in California, President Trump tasked two of his cabinet members to see it for themselves last week. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, Trump's agenda is at odds with efforts in recent decades to honor the site's indigenous history.
The National Park Service has been stewarding the 22-acre island since 1972, which now attracts more than a million tourists and $60 million in revenue annually. But Interior Secretary Doug Burgum tells Fox News that could all change.
This was part of the Bureau of Federal Prisons, and returning it to that purpose is relatively straightforward compared to a lot of other transactions with federal land.
His predecessor, Deb Haaland, also visited in 2021 to respect the island's past.
Like many of the public lands in the care of the Department of the Interior, these lands tell a story, and you can feel it.
19 Hopi men were imprisoned there in 1895. punished for refusing to send their children to boarding schools. A 19-month occupation occurred 7 decades later. Lenato Warjack of the Shoshone Bannock tribes in Idaho was among them.
We took Alcatraz because it was bringing Indian land back into Indian custody. It meant a lot to me and to a lot of our people.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
The clawback of federal funding to public media could hit rural radio stations especially hard. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports, stations big and small are sounding the alarm. And a leader in Native media says tribal stations could be the first to go dark.
KRZA in Alamosa, Colorado, KGLP in Gallup, New Mexico, and KGVA in Harlem, Montana. These are just a few of the stations across the Mountain West that receive up to half of their annual budgets from federal funding. Many more are located on tribal lands, like Idaho's KIYE on the Nez Perce Reservation. Brian Wadsworth is the chief operating officer of Native Public Media, which supports dozens of tribal stations that rely heavily on federal funds.
Some of our stations, they're managed by one person. So to lose funding, you know, we'd see a lot of our stations go dark.
He says these stations are often the only local news source and broadcast critical information like national emergency alerts and extreme weather warnings. That's why South Dakota Republican Senator Mike Rounds says he's secured unused climate funds to direct to dozens of tribal stations. But for now, Wadsworth says they don't have any details regarding how accessible and sustainable that funding would be. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The National Congress of American Indians says it opposes any effort to revive, quote, racist mascots that demean indigenous communities. The organization is responding to President Trump's call for the professional Washington Commanders football team to revert to its former name, the Washington R-word. In a statement Monday, NCAI said since 1950, its priorities have included eradicating Native-themed mascots. NCAI says Indian country has repeatedly come together to condemn the unsanctioned use of Native mascots, contrary to any assertions by the president that Native Americans want the name back. Trump threatened to restrict a stadium deal for the Washington team if they don't go back to the name. The White House told reporters Monday when questioned about the comments that the president was serious and wants to see the name of that team changed. Trump posted the comments on his social media site Sunday and also said he wants the professional Cleveland Guardians baseball team to revert back to its Native-themed name. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Albuquerque is putting in place policies to hold ICE and ICE impersonators accountable. Roz Brown has more.
No matter their legal status, Albuquerque wants immigrants to feel safe in New Mexico's largest city, and has unveiled a new executive order to that effect. Mayor Tim Keller says the order clarifies and strengthens city policies against fraud and impersonators, including directing police to go after anyone pretending to be an ICE agent.
Whether it is ICE agents popping out of vans, wearing masks, rounding up people who are not even immigrants, who are Native Americans, who are legally here in the city, whether it's McDonald's or it's Walmart. This has nothing to do with immigration policy. This is more like terror.
Keller says policy enhancements underscore the city's dedication to uphold the rights and dignity of community members and defend them from intimidation. Over the weekend, the head of ICE said he will continue allowing the controversial practice of his officers wearing masks over their faces during their arrest raids. Keller noted there are 20,000 immigrants in the city who annually contribute more than $5 billion in economic activity. Community organizer Fabiola Landeros with El Centro first got in touch with the immigrant workers' rights group when her brother was deported. She says the Trump administration's mass deportation policy is creating fear, chaos, and suffering, impacting families, public safety and health, the educational system, and the economy.
ICE is disappearing people. Imagine feeling afraid every time you left your home that you will be disappeared, separated from your children, or that you could be held in detention center in a country you're not from. This is against our collective values.
Data show at least 16% of the city's small businesses are run by immigrants. On Sunday, about 300 protesters gathered to demonstrate outside an Albuquerque Walmart, where earlier this month, ICE agents tased a man they were attempting to arrest. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The wife of the developer of the Ice Block app has been fired from her job in the Department of Justice. The app, Ice Block, lets users see real-time locations of Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents. Carolyn Feinstein says she was fired as retaliation for her husband's involvement in the app. In an interview this week, she says that she was fired via email, effective immediately. Feinstein said, quote, "I wasn't just terminated, I was targeted. I was fired as retaliation for my husband's activism. It's probably been about a week and a half since people realized I was married to Joshua Aaron. Since then, there has been an outcry for my firing, accusing me of everything from providing information to the app through my position with the U.S. trustee to outright treason, and none of that is true." In an interview with MSNBC earlier this month, Joshua Aaron, the developer of the app, said, quote, "If you ever wondered what you would have done if you lived in Germany during Hitler's rise to power, wonder no more because you're doing it right now. Developing IceBlock was my way of joining the fight and giving people a chance to help protect themselves and their communities." Aaron was asked if he was concerned about the Trump administration going after him for what he has created. Aaron responded, quote, "I think whenever you push back against a regime that is purporting authoritarianism, pushing fascism, and subverting the rule of law in our Constitution, you have to know they are going to come after you. But the reality is, it's protected speech under the First Amendment. There's nothing illegal about it. It's an early warning system," end quote. The Department of Justice told Newsweek, covering the issue, that Carolyn Feinstein had a, quote, "sizable interest in All You Chart Incorporated, the company that holds the IP for IceBlock. This DOJ will not tolerate threats against law enforcement officers. ICE has condemned the IceBlock app as putting federal agents' lives at risk." Aaron says the app is meant as a warning system, not a tool for violence. He says, quote, "If you see a warning that ICE has been cited, just turn around and keep yourself and your family safe." El Jardín del Agua program provides Spanish language stormwater workshops in Madison, Wisconsin. The program teaches participants how to plant rain gardens and rain barrels that can reduce stormwater runoff during downpours. Dr. Anthony Lysowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lysowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Madison, Wisconsin, a program in English and Spanish teaches people about rain gardens, rain barrels, and other ways to help reduce stormwater runoff. Christina Carvajal is with Wisconsin Eco Latinos. She says 2 years ago, she was talking with the director of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Arboretum, which offers programs about stormwater pollution.
She said, you know, we have all these programs, and yet there is little to no participation of Latinos and minorities in these programs.
So Wisconsin Eco Latinos partnered with the Arboretum to change that. They held listening sessions to learn how to design the program to get more Latinos involved. Some participants said they would like programs that they could bring their kids to.
We learned the community wanted to see more hands-on learning.
And Carvajal says some community members also prefer resources in Spanish. So with these considerations in mind, her group helped create El Guardián del Agua. The program offers bilingual, hands-on workshops about stormwater runoff and steps people can take to help reduce it. So as climate change causes more extreme storms, the initiative is getting more people engaged in solutions. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
U.S. leadership in science research is coming to an end. The Trump administration's politicization of scientific research and its budget and personnel cuts have virtually halted research on climate change and public health, among other subjects. This anti-science agenda is driving American scientists to find positions abroad. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. There was a time not long ago when American scientists and American research facilities were the envy of the world. In those days, our scientists typically swept Nobel and other international prizes. Not anymore. the Trump administration's drastic cuts in scientific personnel and budgets will, quote, essentially end America's longstanding role as the world leader in science and innovation, said Toby Smith, a senior vice president at the Association of American Universities. The results are clear. As two economists recently wrote, in cutting-edge scientific research, whereas in 2017 the U.S. led China in 8 categories, by 2023 it led in only one, quantum computing. We sometimes forget how important in ordinary life is government-supported scientific research at university and other laboratories. One study mentions as examples life-saving medicine, commercial agriculture, and virtual communication. Of the 356 new drugs approved over the last decade, 354 received funding from the National Institutes of Health, the world's largest supporter of biomedical research. The smartphone, computers, and highways are other examples. The U.S. economy as a whole greatly benefits. A paper published by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas found that government spending on research and development has spurred at least a fifth of U.S. productivity growth since World War II. Yes, government-supported classified research underpins the military-industrial complex. Such spending contrasts with open, science-determined research in the public interest, with the government's role that of a distant funder. The Trump administration has fundamentally changed independent research. It has become the minder of research programs in and outside government, much like a ministry in an authoritarian country. It is now impossible to get federal funding that supports research related to DEI, LGBTQ plus rights, and climate change. Mere mention of those topics in National Science Foundation grant applications, over which DOGE presides, has ruled them out. In that same report,